Hi there, this is Kate McClanahan, and this is the Sound Advice Podcast.
Okay, hey there, welcome to the Sound Advice Podcast. We got Brian McKinney, who, the category I would say you work in is like production sound. Does that seem fair?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, good. And we also have Kate McClanahan, our own very own.
Brian, how many years have you been doing sound?
Well, I mean, for the most part, I've been doing it for more than 25 years. So it's really hard to say exactly when I started because there was a period where I would do it for a little bit and then get away from it and come back. And then when I fully became a union sound mixer, it was roughly 96, 97. So, you know.
20 years.
20 plus years, yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. That's for television and film for the most part, is that
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, I mean, mostly TV and film. I've spent most of my time doing television just because I have a family and it keeps me in town. And those are sort of the circles that I run in. So I find myself getting calls for more TV than anything else. Although I have done a number of movies and they're interesting and I do love doing them. But
and we have a friend in common.
Yes, Art Rochester. We have a mutual friend.
We
He's a sound mixer. He and I worked together on...
The Conversation. That was his first film,
oh, really? No, he
which is amazing.
Did the Josh Whedon movie.
He's done Master and Commander. He's done...
Yes. Well, that was one of the things I always remembered about Art was he and I had this conversation once about his interviewing process. When he would interview for another movie, Art would... you know, Art has a tremendous list of pictures that he's done. He's very qualified and a ton of experience, but... People would always ask him about Master and Commander because it was such a big movie. And he and I would joke about it because most of the time they had no idea that he's just breaking his ass trying to get a guide track. He's on a creaky old boat, which just in itself is a nightmare for production sound because it just makes so much noise. Then you add three Ritter fans, which are these giant fans. I mean, 6-7 feet tall fans.
To make waves,
to make the wind and the sails, and you're out in the open sea and they're blowing, you know, water and wind, and those things are just one is enough to kill a production track.
Right.
And you've got, he said he had at least three of them on the deck of this boat, and it's a nightmare. So they're killing themselves just to, so that you can just hear enough of the dialogue. So when the actor goes into ADR to replace it, he has a guide track to go along with.
Yeah.
So, which is funny. So, because if you ever ask a production sound mixer what we sort of most proud of, it would probably be some sort of romantic comedy that's a very wordy sort of picture.
Yeah.
People, 10 people sitting around a dinner table all talking at the same time. Good luck. It ain't that easy.
Right.
So, you know, your action films, the people that win these Oscars, and I've worked with a number of people that have won Oscars for big movies, they win these win for these movies, which is mostly just post sound. I've always thought they should break, you know, split that award up because
winning
an Oscar for sound is really mostly from the post sound, sound designing and the, you know, all the stuff that goes on in the post where the guy that gets the dialogue track is a small piece of it. Obviously, a crucial piece of the story, of course.
Right.
However, I think what makes a great production sound mixer doesn't make a great post mixer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So productions is we're worried about, you know, dialogue, telling the story, and all the words that are coming out of the actor's mouth, whereas a post guy is worrying about everything else. So I've always thought they should split those up, but they don't.
So, Jeff, I was going to ask, you know, what does make a great... Well, not only post, but I mean, what makes a great sound mixer? Because, Jeff, you're mainly post. Would you agree?
Yeah, I've always lived kind of on the post side. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do a lot of audio post. We do, you know, we do commercial audio with Big House Casting and Audio. And but we do a lot of post. And that's what we do when we produce voiceover demos for Sound Advice. It's both sides of that equations, getting the talent and getting the best performance out of the talent, so we're directing them and what have you.
But it's all in studio, which is way different than on set, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I've always, to answer the question, what makes a good sound mixer, I think it's a lot of things. But for me, I've always enjoyed people that have been around longer than me. So when I meet another sound guy and he's been doing it for 30 years, I've always loved that because I know that anything I encounter on set, they've already encountered as well. And so really it's about experience. So to being able to answer a question, oh, I'm going to do, you know, an actor will say, oh, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to jump and spin around in my head and deliver the line. How are you going to get the sound?
Do they tell you that in advance?
Well, no.
Right.
But let's just pretend for a moment they do. God forbid an actor ever tell me anything they do beforehand. The forethought of maybe I should tell the sound guy I'm going to scream. No, I'm just going to scream.
No, he's
well,
just got this.
Really, like, the best actors are risking. So they're trying all sorts of things. They don't want to be limited.
Absolutely.
So this begs the question, do you boom them or do you mic them? You know?
Well, I mean, I will always want to boom an actor because for many reasons. The boom mic, the mic on the end of my boom pole, is the only microphone in the room that moves. So if I put a microphone in your shirt or in your hair or wherever I'm going to put it, if you, you know, throw your head to the left and deliver a line or look straight up and deliver a line, it's going to sound massively different. So I need the microphone to move. So the only microphone that moves is at the end of my boom pole. And by the way, the microphone they put in your shirt is about $350. And the microphone on the end of my pole is about $2,000.
Yeah.
So, you know, you sort of get what you pay for in microphones.
Yeah.
So it, anyway.
Yeah.
But my point on what makes a great sound mixer is options.
Okay.
To have the experience to know what to do in a case where everyone sits around and goes, I don't know, how are you going to get that? I have no idea. And you're like, oh, I know what to do. Let's try this. So to have a sort of bag of tricks is always, you know, paramount to doing
a great
job.
It's what makes you valuable.
Right? Absolutely. It's the and that comes with experience.
Yeah, it's your ideas, your problem solving.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the same as in post. That's something that relates.
Absolutely, yeah. And to have the balls to walk up to an actor in the middle of a sex scene and go, oh, I'm going to put a microphone in your hair. You know what I mean?
I know
you're
naked,
and not be sheepish about it because, look, I've done this before.
Right.
And some of them, they'll look at you like, in my hair?
So that sounds to me like you use, you know, you definitely don't use lavaliers as much.
Well, I mean, with that said, I guess in 2016, I used lavs 1,000% more than I did in 1997.
Wow.
Oh, why is that?
Because specifically because I probably do television. What the expectations from your average post department on a television show is they want what we call ISO tracks.
Yeah.
So if I've got five actors in a scene, I find that post wants them all wired all the time.
Gotcha.
So they all wear it. Now, even if I'm going to boom the scene on a boom pole and everything's great on the boom pole, they still want the ISO tracks. So I believe that just it's post sort of covering their ass trying to – you know, if an actor mumbles a line or like looks down and goes, oh, I don't know. You know,
sure, they want to have that.
It sounds terrible on my boom pole or something like that. They want to have something to go to so they don't have to drag the actor into ADR.
Right.
So
– especially if it's a star, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially if it's a star. Certainly, I mean, your average day playing actor would be like, please drag me into ADR. I get another day of pay, which I get. Your average lead is super busy being
totally
pulled in 100 different directions and doesn't want to be pulled into ADR.
Right.
So, yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff. You were going to ask something.
No, that's
right?
Good. Go for it.
I was going to ask, in terms of, you know, when you record, how do you keep track? You know what I mean? How do you log the takes?
Okay, so
is there a standard? I mean, is there in the industry or is it just everybody?
Definitely. I mean, in the terms of ISO tracks, and you have, as you sit as a mixer, you have a mix track, which is the traditional, like I bring one mic in and I bring another mic in and I record a conversation and I'm mixing the show. Then there's the, let's say in this case, five other tracks of ISO tracks, and each actor will be on its own ISO track. So those are all labeled. And as you go along your, you know, scene one, take one, you're slating that, you hit a little slate mic, hi, scene one, take one, and it prints on the audio, prints right on the audio track, as well as the actual name of the wave file that you're creating will be the name of the track as well.
Good.
So then also embedded into the metadata, into the wave file is the individual names of each track. So if on a lot of machines, you can put a name attached to each track. So if you've got Betty, the actress on line one, and George, the actor on line two, they'll be labeled Betty and George when post pulls them up. So it's pretty easy for them to go, well, we've lost this line from George. Let's find it. Let's go to his ISO track. There's George's ISOs. We're looking for take 7. Go to take 7. Boom, there it goes.
Got it. So, and do they usually do more than one take? I mean, do you find them doing like 3 in a rows or 3 wilds, you know, on a set?
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that really just comes down to the preference of the director. A lot of times directors want to do things in a series. Nowadays, because we no longer use film, it becomes less important to cut. Which really spawns an entire another conversation about the generation of keeping rolling. The cameras are still rolling, and I'm going to just come up and give you notes.
Yeah.
While the cameras are still rolling. So which really just creates a giant mound of stuff that post has to go through.
Yeah.
So do you get to talk to post at all? I mean,
post will regularly talk to me about, you know, issues, time code issues, or, you know, hey, can you know, we'd like our tracks a little hotter, or we'd like our tracks a little softer, or, you know.
So they're getting
whatever.
Everything at the end of the day. Is that correct?
Yeah, every day. Well, probably twice a day. We often break at lunch. Mm-hmm. So we'll give them everything we've done up to lunch at lunch.
Good.
And then we'll start anew after lunch. So
cool.
There. Mm-hmm. It's TV, I always, especially the hour-long episodic, I always relate to the factory job.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing 8.5-9 pages a day of dialogue, and if you don't get that scene, there's another scene coming up right after. So it's the next scene is coming, so you better get it and get it right and get it on time.
Cool. Do you have a preference in terms of television? You do more drama, or I remember you talking about or comedy. I've done it all, really.
Yeah. I've done multi-camera in front of a live studio audience, which is traditionally known as a multi-camera format.
Right.
I've done drama and comedy in what is traditionally known as the single camera format, which is never a single camera anymore. So they just call it because it's just a format of doing shooting in the multi-camera.
I mean, it's not like Birdman?
No.
Darn it.
The multi-camera, everything is shot in one direction, obviously, because you have the studio audience behind you. Okay. In single camera format, you'd have coverage. So you're going to turn around and look back at an actor and all this sort of stuff. And that's the way they cut it. So that's the different that's the ideas behind the two formats.
Okay. Hmm. Well, who hires you?
I'm usually hired by, if I'm booming, I'm hired by the mixer, who is hired by a producer or a UPM. And every,
what's a UPM?
A unit production manager. So it just depends. Mm-hmm. Different shows run differently. In some shows, you'll have a creator, executive producer, writer, main guy that wants nothing to do with hiring the crew or doesn't know how to hire a crew or doesn't want to hire, whatever.
Well, it's a line producer typically, isn't it?
Right, and he'll turn to his line producer. And in some situations, like the show I'm on now, the line producer is an executive producer.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of gets involved and kind of doesn't. In this case, because I've known him for 15 years, he's brought us on board to this show. But
go with what you know.
Right. Other times you can get hired by the UPM or, I mean, hell, you can get hired by the PA, to be honest with you.
Right.
Like, if
good
you
God.
Have a relationship with someone that gets you in the door, that can lead to, you know, to lead really to anything. So
wow. So
good.
How did you get started? What happened that you got into this?
I used to work in the music business, and you know, I was always sort of struggling.
That's how most sound guys get into it, isn't it?
You know, I find that a lot of sound guys are musicians, like recovering angry musicians, but that's a different story.
You too, Jeffrey. Well, he's not recovering. He actually is one.
I don't know. I think you're always in the point of recovering away, right? I get it.
Yes, probably. Yes, exactly. I was in the music business, and I would for one reason or another, I would lose my job, whether the company I was working for would get bought or...
Sounds like radio.
Right.
Or
so,
broadcast.
And I had this friend, my friend Rob Scott, who's still in the business as a sound guy, would literally just say, hey, why don't you just come like work with me on this thing?
Yeah.
Like some interview thing, like back in the day of like hard copy and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'd go like do these like celebrity interviews. And I would just show up for free. He just didn't have anything to do. And he would show me like how you plug the cables into a camera and setting tone and what to do and all this sort of stuff. And so I used to do it, you know, a little bit. And a few times what would happen was Rob would be unavailable. and they would go, "Hey, how about that guy Brian that was standing next to you?" Call anybody that knows how to plug in a microphone.
We know him.
And so I would get these calls from these people, and then slowly but surely I started working, and I would call my friend Rob in jokes like, "I just stole another client of yours." And he was great with it. I mean, that's how awesome. Often in life do you meet a person who will just literally hand you a career?
That's great.
And that's what he did.
Wow.
And he really did. Brilliant. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him.
Wow.
And I learned so much from him. And I remember I used to, as I was doing hard copy and all these sort of like celebrity interviews, and I got into ABC News for a little while, I remember thinking, I wish I could just get on like a TV show where I could just get like a paycheck every week and I wouldn't have to like scramble like every couple of days to figure out what I'm doing. And then I got a TV show. And then I got him one after that. And then before I knew it, I did 7 years straight of episodic TV, which is a
grueling.
I would curse, but I'm not going to. It's a nightmare.
Well, the hours are what? 18, 20, 12 to 18 hours a day?
Well, it's minimum 12.
Yeah.
Almost always minimum 12. You're easily doing 14 to 16 hours a day. Yeah. I mean, it's a 70-hour on average work week.
Yeah.
Right on.
Wow.
That's the – and that's – if you're doing a
– How did you make time to get married and have a kid? How'd that happen?
Well, should I draw you pictures? No.
In the 3 hours of free time.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's – to be – you know, my wife is – she's a former AD.
Yeah.
So she has a slight bit of understanding of what I do, although she never worked in the single camera format that I do.
Yeah.
So she doesn't understand the hours. She's never experienced really the hours that I do.
Yeah.
But she does understand the business.
Yeah.
So she's great.
Yeah.
She will, you know, she's very supportive of it. And,
thank God.
And understands.
Yeah.
But it's hard to carry on a relationship of any kind, even a friendship, mm-hmm. let alone like a marriage. And sometimes it's really difficult for me like to just like parent from a cell phone on a soundstage.
Yeah,
so it's very difficult at times, yes.
Wow. Yeah. Well, Jeff, did you have a couple of questions?
I was wondering what advice would you have for actors, especially like people who haven't been on a set yet? Is there anything to throw out there?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things. You know, I always joke this, but part of it is true. So it is in a joking format, but it is partially true, which is a loud actor is a good actor.
Hmm.
So obviously that's self-serving. But
that's a stage actor in many
right.
respects.
So right. That's what I've always thought like actors should have to do 2 years of theater before they step on a film set or a TV set.
Hmm.
There is a lot of...
stage whisper.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's a lot of mumbling actors today. Even the show I'm on today, which is a big network television mm-hmm. show, there's a couple actors on there that just mumble a lot. And it's hard, you know, it puts me in a position because then I have to go, oh, hey, I know you're, you know, going through your process, trying to do your thing, but I can't hear you. So you need to bring it up. So the last thing I try to do, and what part of the thing, which if I could say it, what I think makes me good at what I do is I very much respect their process, mm-hmm. an actor's process of going through what they're trying to go through to get to where they're trying to get. They're trying to create a character or they've already created a character and mm-hmm. they're trying to do their thing. And the last thing I want to do is bump them out of their thing.
Right.
Right.
Because I respect what they do and it's not easy and it's why we're here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with that, if I have to come up and put my hands on them to adjust their tie because I have a microphone in their tie or in their hair or up their dress or down their shirt or anything, I'm pulling them out of their thing and I'm distracting them and, you know, all of that. So it's very difficult. However, there's the other side of that is they have to be professional.
Yeah.
They have to... Just like they need to understand about how to open themselves up to camera when or not stand in another actor's light, they need to understand that I need to hear them.
This is true in a booth.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in terms of doing voiceover, what, you know, so many actors, especially here in LA, are taught be smaller, be smaller, be smaller, which is the kiss of death in my estimation. It's the kiss of death for voiceover. It's the kiss of death. You never see George Clooney or Julia Roberts being smaller or Don Cheadle. I'm going to be smaller. No, these guys are bigger than life. They know the camera will follow them. And the truth be told, you're reiterating that with sound as well, you know? And that, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I hear actors do that in the booth here too, you know, where they just mumble the heck out of things and you want to go, oh my God, do a freaking vocal warm up. You know, if you did that in the first place, you're going to enunciate better, you're going to be cleaner, you're going to be on top of your game.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a key thing.
I think
it's
all part of the process. In my, it should be part of their process. They, just like they remember their lines, just like they, you know, they have an understanding of how to hit their mark, or like I said, how to open up for the camera so that we could see you, or not stand in an actor's light, or find their own key light. Mm-hmm. You need to understand that, you know, I've got a microphone either in your shirt or over your head. And if you're, you know, talking in such a whisper that's so low that there's literally no audio coming out of your mouth, then guess what? We're not going to hear you.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up in ADR. And in the television world, we're a factory. ADR is difficult.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's what, you know, that's what I try to do.
Nice. Jeff, what do you got?
What's the timeline? Like, you know, because it sounds to me like the timelines are really, really tight on this, on these episodic things.
Well, traditionally the 7 to 8 day episodes in the single camera hour long format, if it's like a half hour comedy, it's more like 5 traditionally. They, you know, very often run over. Sometimes they're 9 day episodes in drama, and sometimes they're 6 and 7 day episodes in comedy. And, you know,
yeah,
it's in drama, it's 8.5 pages a day on average.
Gotcha.
And it's like, I always say, it's like the I Love Lucy episodes with the chocolates. If you don't get this, if you don't get the scene, you're in a lot of trouble because there's another one coming.
Yeah, you better.
And before you know, if you start booting scenes to other days, you're going to fill up your schedule. And all of a sudden they're hiring second units or turning an 8 day episode into a 9 day episode. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very expensive.
You were talking, you told me something about like you were doing one show that was only 4 months and the other one was 9 months. What was the difference? One was
the 4 month show was a half hour comedy probably.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Those traditionally run in the four and a half month. For
what would be an example of that type of show?
Well, I did 5 seasons of a TV show called The League on FX. Mm-hmm. And that's a half hour comedy format.
Yeah.
And a whole different animal because it's unscripted. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah. Well, you know, try being in a room with 6, 7, 8, 9 actors all sitting around a table and you have a stick with a microphone on the end of it, and you have no idea who's going to talk. Ready? Go. So in this case, everyone's wired all the time because that's what Post wants, because if I can't get a, you know, I can't reach an actor with my boom pole, which happens, of course, because I have no idea who's going to talk. They don't know who's going to talk. You know, they need an ISO track to get to it.
So what do you do?
Well, mostly you pay attention. You try to come in and watch, in this case, Jeff Schaefer, the director, who's awesome. You know, there's like a little bit of rehearsal that happens in there. If you're listening very carefully, you can hear Jeff say things like, okay, we'll start with you. And then you say, you're really ugly. And then that's when you come in and then you guys do your thing. So then, you know, okay, I've got something. The guy's going to say you're really ugly. I know that we're just going to start on him. So yeah. I'm going to start there. And then it becomes instinctual. You start looking because there are things actors do like before they talk. They'll just go, they'll breathe in, they'll open their mouth or something.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
You find me sort of like cueing to people sometimes that aren't even going to talk because I thought they were going to talk because they opened their mouth.
Yeah. Wind
so up in the pitch. It's tricky. And then on for that show, you start getting a little bit of a rhythm going. And then, you know, we'll shoot it 4 or 5 times for every scene. But you start getting to know what they're going to say. Oh, right. He's going to say that. And that response that turns into this. This turns into that. And before you know it, you know the dialogue.
Got it.
So that's what happened. So a lot on that show, what would happen was Chuck, the sound mixer on that show, I was the boom operator. We would start by muddying through it. Take one, we used to joke that take one was our best rehearsal. So we would get this sort of take one and I'd move the stick around a lot and then I'd go, okay, I think I know where we're going. So take 2 would be much better. And by the time we got to take 3, it was perfect.
Wow.
So.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's cool.
So that's for half hour comedy.
Right.
You're on Rosewood.
Right, right. I do a show called Rosewood for Fox, which is an hour-long drama.
Now, are most of them, do they have lavs on or do they have?
For this show, yes. Post wants lavs on the actors' all the time, just same exact scenario. But I boom most of the show. Most of the dialogue that Post uses will come from me booming the show.
Okay. And now that brings up, like, if you do have a lavalier on an actor and the makeup's coming at that actor and you have to fix the lavalier on the actor and the actor has to keep their head in the game in the middle of a high emotional scene or something like that, this poses some real logistical issues, tricky. You know, it's going to be interesting.
It's tricky. It gives you worse than that. Imagine an actor in the middle of an emotional scene and we have to use the lavalier. So let's say it's in his tie and it sounds terrible. It's scratchy for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I've got to go up and touch it. So I'm messing with his tie and the mic in his tie. Now, wardrobe is right over my shoulder ready to fix the tie so it's picture ready after I mess with it.
Right.
And then makeup's got stuff on his face.
And the
hair person is doing their hair all at the same time. And he's trying to read his lines and he's trying to stay in the moment. So that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like when I say I really try not to bump them out of their moment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that scenario. It's almost impossible at times.
And you wanted to be an actor.
Right.
So you're in a union, correct?
I am, yes. IA Local 695.
695. And that it's called Local 695. What's the overall union called?
It's IOTC, which stands for something I can't remember.
Right.
And TSC or something like that. And it's an acronym for something that I can't really remember at the moment.
TSC?
Yes.
TSE.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I remember seeing that. Yeah.
Wow. So it's IOTC Local 695. Every engineer. Sort of
technical sound engineer.
Something. Yeah, I doubt it.
No.
Potentially.
You don't think so?
I don't mean to sound
Let's
so
make
foolish.
It up.
25 years and I never paid attention to the acronym.
I'm
about foolish.
The acronyms. No, I like it.
So each department sort of has their own, local.
Yeah.
Cameras 600, electricians are 728, grips are 80.
How local is local? Where do you live? Sorry. Is it where you live? Or
No.
It's
the area that I work in. Yeah, because I'm in Southern California.
Yeah,
IOTC Local 695 is the sound.
Blah, blah, blah.
If I moved to New York, it would be something different.
Okay. Wiggy. So check the gate. We were talking about that before we started. And
My sarcastic ways, of course. Now when they go, okay, check the gate, I always turn to them and say, I'll give you $10 if you can find a gate on that camera. And I'll give you 15 if you can tell me what a gate is.
Is it usually a red?
Red cameras are the worst.
They are, right?
They've gotten a lot better. You should have seen red cameras when they first came out. It was these fancy, cool cameras that everybody wanted to have.
Right.
And
yeah.
No one knew how to use them.
Right.
And there was always a camera assistant standing next to them with the manual on how to use it, which always gives you the wonderful confidence that you're going to make your day.
Right.
This is going to be a great
It's going to be
movie.
Such a great day.
Can't wait to see.
How do you hit record?
Movie.
That's on page 72. That was a terrible camera.
That's hilarious.
But, the whole digital age has happened over the last how many years?
10, 15?
Probably. There's some really wonderful cameras, like the Alexa camera, right, that is everywhere now.
Yeah.
It's really great.
And it's easy.
It is very easy. And the interface between myself and the camera in terms of time code and all that sort of stuff is, even if we are printing audio on the camera, which you have the capability of doing, which we don't do a lot of. It's very easy. They've
nice.
Really got a handle on it now.
Cool.
So, and even the red cameras.
So don't bother checking the gate. Even though they still yell it, though, right?
They do.
Why?
I would assume just tradition, and they just don't know what else to say.
For what?
I don't know.
Maybe that they just want everybody to shut up for a second. So
I don't know. Directors like to hear themselves talk, maybe? I'm not sure.
Nah. Do you think? Yeah,
that
could be. I don't know.
Imagine that. No, it's just a traditional thing. I'm not sure.
What are the best stories on set? I mean, like people leave a lavalier on somebody and they're talking on the phone, right? I mean, you must hear some
Heard some things, but honestly, it's the last thing I want to do.
I'm positive of that. That's
because
like,
that's,
I think I'll go to
that's
the bathroom
get fired
with
stuff. So I don't,
oh, yeah.
I don't
but it's
get
also
involved
like,
such things.
No, never happened. Well, I didn't know about that.
No, that I wouldn't want to do that to them as well.
No.
And one
See,
of the
you're
respectful. When an actor, well, you have to be because I'd like to continue.
No,
working.
But some are not.
When an actor comes to me and they're like, oh, can you hear me while I was in the bathroom? Of course, I'm going to say no.
Right.
And to be honest with you.
You were in the bathroom?
To be honest with you, there'll be times I'll be standing on the set doing something entirely different, and I won't realize that their lav is still up,
yeah.
and the mixer back at the mixer has left the fader up.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I'm listening to them pee.
Ugh.
And not only am I, but everyone at Video Village is listening to them pee. So
how many people are at Village?
I'm immediately, at times there's 15.
I was going
to
say.
And they all have headsets
10
on.
10 to 15 people.
Right. So
yeah.
I'll run over to the mixer board and drop their fader if the mixer's not there. But
that's horrible.
I often give little mini lessons to actors on how to take care of themselves.
Right.
I'm always like, the first line of defense is self-preservation. Take care of yourself. I will do everything I can to protect you. I promise you.
Stop shooting yourself in the foot.
But it's not a perfect science. So right. Here's how you turn it off. Here's how you unplug it.
So what would you want an actor to do? What would be the thing that you'd want an actor to do that would make your life infinitely easier? What makes a professional actor make your job easy?
Be great.
No, in what way?
Well, I mean, in so many ways.
Besides being articulate and clear and concise, doing a stage whisper that's actually a stage whisper.
Yes,
doesn't matter if somebody's 2 feet away. They can't hear us, right? They can't hear us. Listen, just between you and me, right?
Yeah, well, you'd be surprised how many actors don't understand.
Don't know how to do that.
They don't understand what a stage whisper is. They literally will whisper and we can't hear them.
Which is, it's not literal.
Yes.
It's not literal.
No.
It's called acting.
It's not real. It's a television show.
Yeah, so if I slap you right in, I remember having a fight with my sister one time, and she's going, oh, are we acting now? And I said, yeah, so if I slap you, you won't feel a thing. You know, and she was like, what? You know,
exactly.
I'm going to kill you, you know. And I was a little brat. But no, but you know, it's interesting. What would make it really a great thing for, you know, for you? And you know that the actor is totally professional and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just it's just simple things. Just be professional. Like show up. Ready to work. Show up having, you know, done your homework.
Yeah.
You know, come just
it's
like.
It's Spencer Tracy stuff. Know your mark.
Yeah.
Know your lines.
Yeah. Hit your mark. Know
be
your
on
lines.
Time.
Open up to camera. Stay out of the other actor's light. Stay in your own light and project. And from my own perspective, it's project.
Yeah.
Let me hear you.
Yeah.
I need to hear you. Speak up. You know, so just don't mumble your words. Learn how to enunciate.
Yeah.
And.
Well, when we do, you know, here at Sound Advice, when we teach mic technique. And it's the first thing we cover, whether you're a 20-year vet or not, because so many people are screaming through a window in front of a live mic, even after, you know, an engineer's gotten a level and what have you. I know, right? Da, 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 and they're screaming through the mic or through the glass to the control room and what have you. And it doesn't matter how long or how little they've been, you know, going at this. And so, you know, when Jeff and I are going into mic technique, we often begin with this idea that you have to include the mic, you have to include the camera in your sphere of influence, right?
Absolutely.
And you have to, sound follows thought. It goes wherever you think it does. So in terms of projecting, you have to go broader than you think you do. And that's why this idea of training an actor to be smaller for a camera, I think, is a huge misstep. And they're doing a huge disservice to a lot of potentially phenomenal actors, you know, that are out there. And it's really kind of a huge misstep that happens out there. And Jeff, do you want to, can you speak to that at all?
I think you said it great.
I never thought, I've never thought going small translates.
It doesn't on the camera.
I've never thought so. In fact, I find it to be a little bit of the reverse.
Right.
If you're a little, like if you and I are having a conversation and you acted the way you should act in front of a camera, to me, it would be sort of weird. I'd be like, calm down, you'll be all right.
Yeah, right.
But
right,
on camera, it just, it works.
Right.
You know?
You have
so
to
that's why I don't
thing.
Really understand the be small thing. I mean, there's ways to do emotional, quiet, intimate scenes without being small and without being super quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the idea of a stage whisper is really speaks to that. So know those things. And I believe that's part of being professional.
So no good stories. You don't have to mention names. We just want a good. Your favorite story? No, you don't have to tell any bad tales.
No, I'm not.
What was the thing that you did that you go, God, I love my job? Like one story where you go, I love this job.
I'm not sure.
Because I know a lot of stars don't like lavaliers.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, get the heck away from me.
Oh, yeah. I have one of those. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'll just tell you his name. Tommy Lee Jones is his name. And he's not a very nice man.
Oh, there it is.
And he will
He's Ty Cobb.
Yeah, don't put all the lob on him. He's not. I'll just leave it at that.
He'll slide into first with
I'm just kidding.
My
you know what?
Used to say.
To be honest with you, I mean, I joke about Tommy Lee Jones, yes, but to be honest with you, I get it.
Yeah.
If I understand if you're an actor, you don't put anything down my shirt. Leave me alone. And I get it, and that's okay, and that's doable.
Yeah.
Especially in movies where you'll find that they have more time and a little more creativity, or not creativity, but a little more ability to just shoot it on a single camera, mm-hmm. and therefore I can get it all on a boom, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to when we get into this television world, and like I said, the factory sort of mentality. Mm-hmm. There's less opportunity to do that. And they're shooting two cameras and one's really wide and the other one's really tight.
Right.
I've got to use a lav. So unless you want to ADR the entire scene,
yeah,
we got to put this lav on.
Right.
And so you have to deal with it. So where guys like Tommy Lee Jones in this case, like he's a feature guy. He's going to be making movies and you know, he doesn't have the same kind of problems that some of these actors that I have to deal with in terms of having to wear a lav.
So does an actor have a preference? Can you say, can I have a lavalier? Or can I, you know, can you boom me?
They can certainly ask for whatever they'd like.
Yeah. But they're going to get what whatever you're serving that day.
Yeah,
is that right?
I mean, mostly if an actor wants a lavalier and he doesn't need it or I don't want to put it on him.
Yeah.
I'll talk him out of it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, no actor is going to want to be hassled like that.
You wouldn't think.
Right. No, you wouldn't think.
But some do.
I don't know that I've ever experienced that, to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever experienced anyone saying, oh, can I have a lav? oh, I know I've got this really pencil skirt on, but would you mind sticking your whole hand up my skirt to put the transmitter somewhere near my butt?
It's not a pack of Skittles. Yeah. Right.
Nice. No, it's not a pack of Skittles. And, you know, it seems interesting, but no.
Wow.
And so I have a lot of sort of empathy for them, especially women and tight.
Sure.
Skirts or whatever it is, what they have to go through.
Well, we've been doing some voiceover with you. What made you what made you want to get into that, and what triggered all that stuff?
It started with something I do with my son. And you know, we're driving around, and I'm always doing voices with my son in the car, and mostly just to irritate him. But quite often, he gets a kick out of it, and I'll leave him. Now that he's like 11, I'll leave him voicemails on his iPhone with, you know, as someone else, and he just thinks it's hilarious.
Oh, that's good.
So, what kind of really brought me to it initially was I'd love to do voices for animation or video games or something like that.
Yeah.
But as I got more into it and I started paying more attention to it, I enjoyed doing commercials. And
you're great at it.
Thank you.
Really great.
I'm trying. I have a lot to learn. But,
Well, cool. Brian, thank you so much for coming and doing this. This is really fun, and it's opened our eyes to a lot of cool stuff, and hopefully it's been really helpful to the people who are listening.
Just make sure you tell Tommy Lee Jones I love him.
We love Tommy Lee. I love Tommy Lee Jones. He is. He's an interesting cat. Like Willem Dafoe. Have you ever met Willem Dafoe?
I have. I worked on Spider-Man.
And talk about a voice.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is great.
Actors have great voices, man.
I never wanted to be in this business. It was nothing I ever aspired to do. And I know that sounds silly, but 20-something years later, there are some things I really love about it. I have met some wonderful people.
Yeah.
I have been part of some great stuff and watched some really great actors do their thing. And And there's parts of it that are really, really awesome. And, you know, it's not, I'm not digging a ditch or putting a roof on a house, which, you know, is a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
So, and I make a good living and I support my family making movies
it's
and
fun.
TV shows,
isn't
which is
great?
Kind of
That's
silly
awesome.
On some level. So
it's really cool.
I do appreciate, you know, I do appreciate it.
Well, you put in the hours too, God knows, you know, I mean,
yes.
that really is a thing. So check the gate.
Cut, print, check the gate. That's a wrap.
Well, thanks, Brian, for sharing with it. That's sharing with us.
Yeah,
that's
of
awesome.
Course. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
This is Kate McClanahan. This has been the Sound Advice Podcast. To find out more about voiceover and our process, check out voiceoverinfo.com.